Hey everybody, this is So Many Sequels. I'm Josh.
And I'm David.
I'm Garrett. Look, see, you know, you do this for seven seasons and you forget to unmute still. You never forget the small things.
Rookie mistake. Yeah,
but
right
you
there.
Mouthed I'm Garrett, so I went ahead.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Right? People knew. People
the
knew.
Viewers will know.
They'll see the beat.
They're going to be thrown. Why are they saying it out of order?
Exactly. welcome to the show. This is week two of Oscar Madness March month. Month of March. Mm-hmm. Where we're talking about Best Picture winners all month long. We did In the Heat of the Night last week, which was Garrett's pick. This week we're going to do my pick, which is Amadeus. Came out in 1984, won Best Picture, along with a slew of other awards. We're going to talk about that later in the show. First, of course, we got to catch up on what's been going on with everybody lately. And David, I know that you got to do a rare outing to the movie theater recently.
I did.
What did you go see?
Oh, I saw one of my most anticipated movies of the year, Kung Fu Panda 4.
oh my gosh.
You know, I think on our most anticipated, I phrase it as I love those Kung Fu Panda movies, and I do. I do. Each one of them is very good, and this one was also pretty good. I wouldn't say it was as good as the other three, but I would challenge anybody to find me a more consistent franchise than the Kung Fu Panda franchise. It is like, they are all either 4 or 4.5 stars or 5 stars like Kung Fu Panda 2. They are an incredible group of films. For me, it's the closest thing is like a lot of people love the How to Train Your Dragon movies. Never seen any of them, but everybody says they're great. Okay. And for me, this is my How to Train Your Dragon. This is the Kung Fu Pandas.
They are good. The How to Train Your Dragon.
They cut a lot of characters and brought in some new ones. I guess they just thought it was going to be too many people if they brought in like 4 new characters, but have the existing like 8 others that they already have. So that was a little bit of a disappointment, losing, you know, some of the other big names, but I found it fine. I found the story to be fine. The action animation is so good in these movies, like the choreography. It's clear that like the people who work on these movies love martial arts films. You can just feel it and you can see it. So it was good. It's funny. Jack Black's always very funny in these. And a banger of a credits song where he sings Hit Me Baby One More Time by Britney Spears. And maybe improves it. Maybe the best version ever. You know, if it's not Kelly Clarkson doing your song better, it's Jack Black. You know, like, sorry,
that's
Britney.
That's true.
Wow.
I
don't even know how to respond to this because I have, don't get me wrong, I've seen the video of Jack Black singing it, and I'm happy with the video, but that's a bold statement, sir.
He's not gotten to me yet.
It's something about Jack Black's voice. The way he goes, one more time! You can't, you know, what are
I'm
you going to do?
I'm nervous. I want to hear it, but I don't.
Oh, you haven't heard it? You haven't heard
Jack Black singing? No, this has not gotten to me.
Hit Me Baby One More Time?
This has not gotten to me yet.
It's pretty good. Pretty good. Yeah, I would say pretty good. I give it 4 stars myself.
Wow.
Your mileage may vary, but one of these days, I'll sit down and we'll force you guys to watch the Kung Fu Panda movie.
So Kung Fu Panda 4, 4 stars, but also not as good as the other three. Are those all 5 bangs for you? 5, 5, 5?
No. So 1 and 3 are 4.5. 2 is 5.
Ooh, okay. Interesting. I know almost nothing about the movies. So one day, perhaps, I'll watch them.
The great thing about the Kung Fu Panda series is they metaphorically are just like their lead character, who looks buffoonish and dumb and seems like a really bad idea. But there's more beneath the surface, you know? So that was what I discovered in 2008, roughly, and it's maintained all the way through.
I choose to believe it's an animated version of Beverly Hills Ninja, and I'll hear nothing of the sort.
Not necessarily wrong.
Not far
better,
off?
But not necessarily wrong.
Huh. I'm tempted.
So one of the things to talk about, but I also watched... at my wife's behest, the Mean Girls.
Oh, okay.
Mean Girls. That's not called the Mean Girls musical.
No.
But it's called Mean Girls, the movie with Renee Rapp and company.
Yeah, it's the full time.
Yeah.
Mean Girls movie with Renee Rapp and company.
And you know, I don't think it was possible for me to like it as much as the first one, as the original, because that was my Mean Girls.
Well, sure.
But it was actually a pretty entertaining movie. It was well done. I thought that the way they incorporated music into it, the songs into it, was interesting, where they chose to put songs and where they didn't. So pretty fun. I like that it's a little meta at times. There's some characters that talk about how they couldn't do a song, or they couldn't do something because they were in the middle of a song and dance or whatever. So I don't know, it's kind of funny. I love the young performances. I thought that, by the way, the parent casting in that movie is fantastic. Renee Rapp and Busy Phillips, but also the lead actress who's playing Caddy, her mom being Jenna Fisher. I was like, this is perfect. This is perfect. Anyway, I'll stop going. Garrett, you also saw Mean Girls, I believe, right?
Yeah, it finally came out. It is streaming on Peacock, I believe. I don't actually know where it's at. I found it somewhere. And I also found it very enjoyable. I think that this did a really good job of, bringing it to a modern stage for a new generation. I don't think it hit with me as strong as the other one, but I also didn't see the original one until like 2 years ago. So, you know, whatever. It's not necessarily something that is deeply connected to me. I do think that everybody that was in it gave a great performance and sang wonderfully. I think I gave it a very strong, like, 2.5, just because, you know, it didn't wow me. It didn't knock my socks off in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
And again, for me, I typically say that, like, most movies that make it into a theater are a 2.5 at best. And so, like, for me, I watched it at home. Had I seen it into the theater, I'm sure it would have been easily bumped up to, like, a 3 or 3.5.
Yeah,
so,
your 2.5 is your, like, true middle.
It is.
And I can't be there with you on that. But
I see so many movies, and more of them are bad than good. So... So the average is where I try to stay.
See, and I hover in the 3. The 3, like, if it meets expectation, it's 3, you know? But if it goes beyond, then we start getting into better territory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about you, Josh? You've already seen Mean Girls.
Yeah, I saw Mean Girls in the theater. I liked it more than I expected to. I haven't seen the Broadway musical, and I also hadn't really been exposed to the music. It's not often that the Broadway soundtrack makes it to me before I see the show, unless it's something like Hamilton big, you know. So I am unfamiliar with what the original soundtrack sounds like. So that said, I was like, yeah, I like this. I've seen since there are some complaints from fans of the Broadway musical that they changed some things up that people don't like as much. So I can't really speak to that, but I really liked the music, thought the songs were fun, I thought the cast was really fun, I thought in some ways there's like some serious improvements. This is not a better movie than Mean Girls 2004, but I do think there's some improvements. Like I said again, the casting, no disrespect to what Rachel McAdams did with Regina George, but I thought Renee Rapp was like even more villainous in a very fun musical way.
See, and I'm different on that.
Oh, you're different on that, huh? No, see, I thought she was great.
I don't think she's bad.
Well, no, I know.
But I think, personally, I guess this is just when I was 14 versus being 34.
Mm-hmm.
I was just more intimidated as a 14-year-old by Rachel McAdams than I am as a 34-year-old by Renee Rapp. I guess just maybe because I'm so much older than
that's,
I just didn't, I don't know.
That's why, that's fair.
It's an age thing, I think.
Could be. Yeah, it's again, and it's no disrespect. I just was like, I think I like this one better.
Well, she's more age appropriate, obviously.
Right. And then there's some really fun jokes in there that I really appreciated that just like reek of Tina Fey. There's a scene where the Damian character is singing the iCarly theme song in French, and that is hysterical. There is a moment where Tina Fey is about to sing, and then, you know, it's cut off right at the moment. That's hysterical.
My wife thinks that the Damian character is an improvement, one of the improvements over the original.
I agree. I do.
I don't want to take any away from that from the original actor, but yeah, they're both very, very good.
Yeah. So I agree. Mean Girls is the musical is pretty fun. It makes me want to see the stage play for sure, and that's streaming now on Paramount Plus.
So, Josh, I think we referenced it when we talked about In the Heat of the Night, but you had a bit of a viral explosion just recently.
Yeah, you know, the way we...
Not like a sickness.
But, no,
you
know, No, you got to be careful with the words viral explosion these days. But yeah, just the way we record this show, we hadn't really had the opportunity to talk about it yet. But yeah, I had a weird movie related social media viral video experience that was unexpected and strange, and I felt like we should probably talk about it on the show because it was kind of cool. Because it involved, I was at a movie theater. I saw this guy in Dune cosplay. I was like, that's amazing. I'm going to take a video of him. I did. Mm-hmm. I put it online. And everybody agreed. It was amazing. Like, it was huge. That's the basic premise of what happened, right? So yeah. It's just really cool to me that it's about someone making the movie theater experience really fun and cool again.
So, yeah, I mean,
I don't know. It's weird.
You say everyone agreed, but it's not just it's like 4 million views at this point.
Yeah.
It was featured on At Midnight and Fallon Tonight.
Yeah, the Tonight Show.
Which I know you as a college geek really wanted to write for the Fallon Show.
Connoisseur of late night television, yeah.
The only thing better would be Conan referencing it on his podcast in a few weeks.
Right. No,
it was pretty cool. This guy is just riding a hoverboard covered in like one of those tubes that dogs run through at the American Kennel Club. I think he's made an incredible suit. He seemed like a cool dude. There was I saw a few other videos where he talked about it. I think when you referenced it the other week, you were like, "Did you guys see that video I posted?" And we're like, "Yeah, yeah." He's like, "Yeah, it's got like 1,000 views." And then, boom!
Did you get a chance to talk to the cosplayer himself?
Not in depth, really. So, like I said, I didn't know the guy at all. I was going to see Drive Away Dolls, which I did not enjoy. But I got this out of it, so that was a nice trade-off. I was in the concession line. And so, to go into more detail, he was in a full, like, Paul Atreides Dune costume with, like you said, some kind of hoverboard. I think it was a one-wheel, actually, style hoverboard that he had fashioned this, like, child's, like, tube, you know, like, for a fort to make that he had spray-painted and decorated and all that. I don't know. He ended up getting interviews and stuff with IGN and some other big publications talking about his process of making it, so check those out. But he was just, like, zooming around. And I was like, that's amazing. I need a video of that. Took it, posted it later. Yeah, I started to notice it was like getting some buzz when we were recording in the heat of the night. And then by morning, it was like over 1 million views and it was going wild. And everybody was in my DMs. And then, yes, he found me, messaged me. He was like, oh my God, this is crazy. Can you tag me in the videos? I was like, yes, absolutely. So I added him to everything. So we messaged back and forth a couple more times just about making sure the video was allowed where he wanted it to be allowed and me and all that stuff. And it was cool. It was crazy. He posted a video a little bit afterward that he had made. With like more behind the scenes stuff of him zooming around the movie theater. And it also took off and has gotten even more views, which is awesome. I think from all the interviews and stuff he's gotten from doing the cosplay. And he was like, I just wanted to like go do something fun.
Yeah, it's rare that you can break the internet because of just like fun things, and that's awesome. Right. So like, I'm sure that's a really nice feeling. And also, yeah. I don't want to speak for you two, but I'm going to. We extend a formal invitation that if you would like to join us on the podcast, you know, welcome, come hang out and do some movie reviews with us. Feel free to cosplay it up, should you choose. Not required.
Join us.
Totally optional.
You know, pretty soon we'll do, I'm going to say like 3 years from now, 2 years from now, however long it takes for Dune Messiah to come out, we'll do Dune June and we'll do all the dunes and we will have a blast. We'll talk and you can come join us for Dune Messiah.
Yeah. Yeah. I did also let him know that I was like, hey, I also do geeky movie things and have a podcast. maybe we should do something someday. So, yes, that invitation's out there. If you want to check him out, he's at Red Prince Rising, print like a printer. Prince. Jesse Meyer on Instagram and TikTok. So check him out.
I love my last thing about that. I love that everybody's joke was the same joke, which was he rides up and says, one ticket to Drive Away Dolls, or one ticket to Migration, please, or whatever, you know, yeah, whatever yeah. the... Whatever the most random movie Madam somebody Web could think of was.
Yeah. The,
what movie did Madam Web, Web
was
please?
The Tonight Show joke. Which was also in like 100,000 of the comments. I don't know. It was fun. Exactly. It was fun for a day for like all these brand accounts to be commenting on my video. Like Dolby is in there. Mm-hmm. Legendary Pictures is in there. Drumstick, the ice cream cones. There, yes. There. That's fun.
That's the best one. Oh my god!
Why did they comment? Was there a drumstick in the background?
No, they just loved it, I guess. And they actually commented a lot. They followed up and did multiple comments.
Love that for them.
Who else? Dude Wipes. That's a fun one.
Yes,
I'm Dude like wipes. Thinking of all the dumb brands that commented. No, we appreciate. We love the brands.
Yes.
Yeah. If you want to sponsor our podcast, you're also yeah, more than welcome.
We're always
to.
Open.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, we'll work on getting the next viral video on our So Many Sequels podcast.
Until
so,
then,
the next time I engineer one.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Until then, you fun. Can subscribe to us on YouTube.
Exactly.
And you might find them there.
Yep. Check us out on YouTube. So Many Sequels in your YouTube app. We are gunning for a goal of 121 subscribers. We're getting closer. We're inching closer. So go check that out in the app and subscribe there. And then also in your podcasting app. And you can find links to all that at somanysequels.com. All right, let's get into our discussion of the movie of the week, Amadeus. This week on the show, we are talking about the 1984 film Amadeus. The Letterboxd synopsis says, "The incredible story of genius musician Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, told in flashback by his peer and secret rival Antonio Salieri, now confined to an insane asylum." This movie won Best Picture, which is why we're talking about it this week, won a bunch of other Academy Awards as well. But how did it perform at the box office? David is here to answer that question for us. David, how did it do?
How did it do indeed? Amadeus opened the weekend of September 21st, 1984. This was a typical small limited release to start, only 25 theaters opening weekend. It opened in the number 13 spot with just $505,000. The movie was never in a lot of theaters. Its max was 802 theaters in April of 1985 in the United States. It was only in more than 400 theaters about 11 times throughout its entire run. However, the movie would go on to make $51 million in the United States, and Box Office Mojo doesn't have a track for this, but according to a Variety article from 1985, its worldwide total finished at $90 million. According to, I'm gonna cite a fellow Reddit user here, Sanderso47, the movie is the 45th best performing best picture winner of all time, if you count the 90 million from the worldwide that I attributed to Variety. If you don't count that, if you just want to go by Box Office Mojo, then it would be number 52. But either way, 45th best picture winner of all time in terms of box office draw. For the year of 1984, it's a year we've been to a couple of times, and I'll talk about that more here a little later as we get into the Academy Awards performance. But 1984 was a pretty big year for a lot of movies we all love, including Beverly Hills Cop was your number one movie of 1984. Ghostbusters was number two. Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom was number three. Gremlins at number four. And then The Karate Kid at number five with $90 million. One more little stat. I don't know who to attribute this to, but it's in the Wikipedia entry, so I'll read it. Is that Amadeus is one of five Best Picture winners to have never reached the top five in its box office run. Its highest peak was at the number six spot in its eighth weekend. It joins films The English Patient, The Hurt Locker, Birdman, and The Artist as the only other movies to never reach the top five in their in box office weekend for a Best Picture winner. So that's all I've got for this week. It's a pretty modest success, I would say. It did well in its long-term run, $90 million, but at $51 million, it was the, it was the number 12 movie of 1984.
So this week on the show for Oscar Madness March, I decided to do Amadeus. I told you guys in the teaser episode for this month that I wanted to do some counter programming because I knew in advance what you guys were doing, which we announced in that episode. Of course, we've already done In the Heat of the Night, which was Garrett's pick, and next week we'll be doing The Sting, your pick, David. So I was like, I'm going to go with Amadeus, because that's very different from those two. But it's also outside of our normal wheelhouse. This movie won Best Picture at the 1985 ceremony, 57th Academy Awards, along with multiple other awards. How many total was it, David? Eight, right?
It won 8 out of 10
nominations. 8 out of 10 nominations. This movie won... I'll just list them real quick. Best Picture, Best Adapted Screenplay, Best Art Direction, Best Costume Design, Best Makeup, Best Sound, and Best Director, and Best Actor for F. Murray Abraham. So huge movie at the Oscars that year. I decided to pick it also because I remember seeing it as a kid in middle school music class. In, again, one of those situations where you watch a movie for 30 minutes for 5 days until you finally finish it. And I couldn't remember a lot of details about it, but I just remember having a fondness for it. And I was like, I need to see if I still have that. It's just a different type of historical biopic that you see at the Oscars also. It's not a political figure or a war story. It's Mozart. What other movies are there about Mozart? And it's also uncharacteristically funny for a Best Picture winner, in my opinion. So I thought that was an interesting part about it, too. What about you guys? Garrett, had you seen this movie before?
No, this was my first time, as many of these movies have been, as it seems to be a reoccurring theme this season for me. I don't know how I feel about all that.
It's good, though.
But no, this
was
the first time.
Expanding.
It is. Yes, I do appreciate that. And I think that this, you know, this movie certainly was not what I expected going into it. I think it really kind of threw me for a loop because, you know, when you think of a biopic at this point in time, we're so used to it being riddled with historical accuracy, at least as much history, like close to history as you can be. And this one really wasn't. And so for a while, I really struggled with that. But like, as I think about it again, being told through a rival's eyes, I think is a really interesting way to take this. And so to be able to have this, you know, story from a character who is real, but maybe not necessarily as connected as they portray. But the performances and the art and the production value for me is really where this movie shines. And I think it was a really interesting pick. And I'm excited to continue our discussion, boys.
Yeah. David, what about you? First time?
Likewise, this was the first time for me. I'd seen many references to it. Like, it's a highly referenced movie, whether that was Family Guy, I Love the 80s. I remember watching that as a kid, and there being like a nice little section about this and the song Rock Me Amadeus, which I guess loosely inspired that, is what we discovered, which is a real earworm, German or not. So it was the first time for me. I don't really view it as a biopic because it's not... I don't feel like it even, yeah, like you guys have said, it doesn't follow that formula. It's, and it's not historically very accurate. You know, we'll get into this later, but, there's a lot of changes that they make to, certain people, their motivations, their lifestyle, their story. So, I thought it was very interesting. And the director describes it as a fantasia, a fantasy based on reality in a lot of ways. While still being very grounded, very approachable, I thought. So it was my first time viewing, and I was a little thrown off, a little jarred at first, because my interpretation was this was a comedy, like flat out. Only to discover it's actually more of a drama, but has, you know, a lot of humorous elements, has humorous characters.
Right, right. Like, I said it's uncharacteristically funny for a Best Picture winner. Not to confuse it with a pure comedy, because it's not, but it is oddly funny, I think. There's, like, parts of it where I'm like, is this even appropriate to laugh at? I guess it is. I don't know. So, in that way, it's very comedic. And also, I was looking at what it was up against for Best Picture that year. A Soldier's Story, Place in the Heat, A Passage to India, The Killing Fields. And I don't know what this does to my credibility, but I haven't heard of any of those movies.
Samesies. I feel like A Passage to India is vaguely familiar.
So if I'm going down, we're all going down together.
Yeah.
On that one.
Oh, actually, I think this is I typoed this. This is A Place in the Heart.
Oh.
Not in the heat, but the heart. But either way.
Well, the fact that I didn't catch it also says enough right there. So.
Yeah, I have also not heard of any of these, but I assume they're probably all very good, though.
I mean, you would hope in the Best Picture category that they would be. Mm-hmm. So, like we said in the best in the box office portion of the show, this movie is ultimately about the story of Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, the famous composer, but kind of as told from the perspective of Antonio Salieri, who is his. Who is a big fan / protege / grows to be greatest rival because of the jealousy that begins to grow for Salieri as their careers grow together. So it's about these two guys at the heart of it. And another interesting thing at the Oscars that year was that it featured both of these actors nominated for Best Actor, right? Was that the right category? Yes, Best Actor. Yes. You had F. Murray Abraham for Salieri, as well as Tom Hulce for Mozart. And the last two times actors from the same film were nominated for the Best Supporting Actor was...
Best same category.
In the same category was when, David? Yeah.
So in Judas and the Black Messiah, which we reviewed, right. this is baffling. Both Lakeith Stanfield and Daniel Kaluuya were both nominated for Best Supporting Actor, which means I ask you guys, who was the lead in that movie if the two leads were Best Supporting Actor?
Now that's...
What are they doing over there?
That's...
They're FBI, the co-leads.
The FBI was the lead in that movie.
That's true. That's true.
It was... So, anyhow, but yeah, so that was supporting, and this time for Amadeus, Murray and Hulce were both nominated for Best Actor.
Gotcha.
So there was no supporting actor nominated. So this is that was the last time it was ever for Best for both for Best Actor, but supporting actor did happen recently.
Got it.
With Judas and the Black Messiah. Got it.
Okay. Well, so that's really interesting. F. Murray Abraham won. The Salieri performance won that out. Mm-hmm. We'll be talking about these performances a little more in depth here, but I just love the serendipity of F. Murray Abraham winning over the Mozart performance in this movie, when the whole movie is about Salieri feeling as though he is being literally punished by God as for not being talented enough to be as good as Mozart.
Yes.
It's just a delicious irony to me. So I love it when a plan comes together.
Oh, I love that you pointed that out, because it is like, that's now God's laughing at you, Mozart. You know,
right.
It's very like you said, solitary gets his
revenge. Makes you wonder. F. Murray Abraham seems like he may have been the kind of actor to do that, to be like, I did that for you, Salieri.
To maybe mention it. But you know, not to be, we'll talk, like you said, we'll talk about the actors here a little more in a minute, but also Tom Hulce, pretty good performance, I would say. We'll dive deeper in a moment.
Yeah. So another thing to probably be upfront with about our review here is that we all three watched the director's cut, which, as far as we could tell, might be the only version that exists to watch, because we all ended up with it accidentally. So that's...
I found an option for the original, but it's just not available. Like, it's like not available to purchase.
Yeah. Yeah, so it adds about 18 to 20 minutes of extra scenes that kind of throughout the movie. So just know that going forward. Let's go ahead and get into our first initial thoughts then. Garrett, let's go back to you. Now that you've seen it, what'd you think of it? How do you feel about Amadeus? And is it a best picture?
I liked it. It was, you know, it's one of those where I probably will never ever go back and watch it, but I'm not going to stop anybody. And if someone was like, you want to watch Amadeus, I'd be like, yeah, all right. You could talk me into that. You could talk me into that. I don't know much about Mozart, other than, you know, I learned about him in like an elementary music class, but also not a thing that elementary Garrett was interested in. So, you know, his background wasn't something that was known to me. So seeing the performance and the way that his character is portrayed was such a shock initially. He was seen as so childish and like just not what you would expect of a composer of the time, right? And that's nice to see, because throughout the entire movie, he's just backhanded with people who are like, why aren't you more like us? And you can see the way that he thinks and the gene, and he just really does a good job of showcasing the brilliance that comes with it, in addition to some of the silly things. And then on the other hand, F. Murray Abraham, what an incredible performance. Like, I get why he won. It truly was impressive. What a God complex this man has, to think that, you know, because he prayed and wanted this, you know, he wanted to do it for God, but he wanted to be famous. I mean, that's one of the first things that he says, right? So no wonder that he didn't get this. And then to see Mozart, who is just
an ass
there. Yeah. And he's just talented. And that to drive this man to literal insanity, and the spiral that he goes through, and the way that he tries to keep him down throughout the whole thing, and the depths of his villainy is he's like a living scar, like that level of villain.
Well said, well said.
Yeah, David, what about you?
Oh, you know, I agree. You know, the director's cut did run long, but. I kind of looked it up. It's about, most of the first hours where all the cut stuff was re-added. And then there's a scene towards the very end of the movie that was cut and put back in. I found it to be a very interesting premise. I loved the start of it. You know, I loved how we see Salieri as a low point. You know, he's like crying out, apologizing to Mozart for killing him somehow. And then we get this interaction with him and this priest. And who knows if he would have framed it this way if the priest hadn't come, but he frames the entire struggle that he has with Mozart around his relationship with God, and how, you know, God seemed to be lifting him up, and then he was tearing him down by just putting Mozart in the world, essentially. I love him referring to Mozart as the creature and things like that. It just made for this great... theatrical or something. And you know, maybe to no surprise, this is adapted from a stage play, a 1979 play that was itself based on a shorter play from 1830. Like it has a lot of big theatrical elements. It has a very engaging dialogue in that respect. And then this is like a movie for actors to digest. If you're big on performances, there's a lot of great monologues here. If I had known about this movie, how long have I been out of college? 15 years ago now or so. I might have stolen a monologue from this to do for my scene auditions and stuff. But so really good performances. Probably, you know, honestly, would have loved to see the shorter cut, maybe, because it's, I imagine that some of this stuff, I can tell why it was cut. And maybe some of the stuff that wasn't cut maybe should have been also. Who knows? But I think it's very interesting characters, good performances, good dialogue. Almost obviously very good production design. You know, everything looks like you're in that world. And like you said, Garrett, I love that Mozart as a character subverts your expectation of what Mozart is like. You think of him as a stuffy, aristocratic composer. But the guy, he died when he was 35. He barely got out of his youth, more or less. And most of his youth was spent performing for kings and queens. He was the first child star. you know, maybe not the first, but he was one of the first child stars that'll do stuff to you. So, very interesting. I really liked it. Yeah. What, Josh, what, did you say what, you know, did you give your first thoughts?
You know, it really, it held up for me. So first of all, I was like, I need to revisit this. And I still was like, okay, this was fun. I enjoyed this movie a lot. And it is because of the strength of the performances of F. Murray Abraham and Tom Hulce in these roles. Salieri and Mozart are just such great rivals. They do such great cat and mouse. They do such great spy versus spy almost type of stuff. But also it's like Wile E. Coyote in a way, where Mozart's the roadrunner who always just gets the one up on him. And I just love
without
that.
Really trying.
Right, without really trying. And that's what's so delicious about watching it unfold as it gets crazier and crazier and as they get closer and closer together as collaborators. So watching it now, not as a 12 to 13-year-old, I get that a lot more. Back then, I was like, there's so many farts. There's a lot of farting in this movie, a suspicious amount of farts and discussion of farts. And like one of the scenes that cracks me up is when we kind of first meet grown Mozart is, or when Salieri does, he's excited to meet him and he just kind of bursts into this room with Tish, rolls around, and they're all, you know, being dumb teenagers. Mm-hmm. And what does he even say?
He's talking in reverse.
Yes. He's like people fart backwards. And I was like, what the hell is this movie? Oh yes, thank you. Yes. Yeah. So there's just a lot going for it, but then again, at the end of the day, I gotta bring it back to the rivalry with these characters. I love watching mm-hmm. how it evolves. I love watching Salieri just completely fall apart. He never recovers, even though he feels he did at the end. Mm-hmm. And Mozart, almost none the wiser, doesn't care, dies due to his own addictions and illnesses. So it's just like a tragic story. But like a classic story about jealousy being your own downfall.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And David, you had mentioned some of the scenes that were in this, but one of the things that I really liked about the director's cut is I feel like you got to see more of Elizabeth Berridge's Stanzi Mozart. And I think that character mm-hmm. is really strong throughout the whole thing. I mean, she is the one that is like, she basically keeps Mozart in, not in line because he was not in line, but like focused on what was mattered. And she was the one who was like, we need to survive. And she kept mm-hmm. them afloat. You know, he was the talent and she was called the manager at one point in time. And like her strength mm-hmm. and like, you know, she was really strong until that last moment where she was just like, I'm done with this, you know, and had mm-hmm. that moment.
Mama tried.
Yeah. And then she came back there at the end. But like, I really appreciated her performance too. And I think that, you know, I feel like a shorter version, she would have been one of those characters who was cut and just mm-hmm. kind of was here a couple of times and then faded into the background. And so it was nice to see a fully fleshed out character there. I appreciated mm-hmm. that piece.
100% because the, I thought that her performance was very good. She's aggressive. She's vulnerable. She's tougher than Mozart in a lot of ways. You know, she stands up for herself, stands up for him. Like I said, you know, Mama tried, but you know, despite her pleading, Mozart denied. Most of her story is cut from the original. And that's why, I assume that's why there's no nominee for her as best actress, because this whole subplot with Salieri, forcing her to undress, force, you know, implying that she needs to have sex with him in order for Mozart to get this role with the king or role with the emperor, all gone, none of that. And like the scene they have where they fight over money while he's trying to play billiards, not in there. Like, so most of her best stuff is cut from the theatrical version, the one that won Best Picture. And by restoring that, I think the director made the ultimately, I think the director made the right choice. By restoring that, it makes for a fuller movie, because all of this stuff about how Mozart's struggling with money doesn't come up until basically the very end of the theatrical cut, based on what I've learned has been cut out. And so I agree with you. A great third performance that I don't think probably gets enough shine compared to the other great performances in this movie.
Yep. Couldn't agree more. And let's talk about another one of those. Let's talk about Mozart, Tom Hulce, because he gives a really wild performance in this. You know, first of all, haven't really said this yet, but I don't know anything about the historical accuracy of this film. So I believe just through some basic Googling and some YouTube searches that I've done, that is not considered to be highly accurate historically. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if this is how Mozart really behaved. So we're not going to get into that. But for the sake of...
He was a wild boy, but I think it was exaggerated.
Right. So for the sake of the discussion, we're acknowledging that.
Yeah.
But he's crazy. He has this signature laugh that is just so grating. yes. And I put it in our notes, and I couldn't stop thinking about it since, but he reminds me of SpongeBob and Salieri as Squidward, down to the laugh and down to the sullenness of Salieri, and Mozart being like, ha ha ha, fart, and he just like farts his way into success as Squidward Salieri, just like can't catch a break.
And just stuck in mediocrity for his whole life. That's the Squidward story.
Yes, the patron saint of mediocrity, as he later names himself, apparently.
I also compared it to Alexander Hamilton and Aaron Burr.
Yeah. So
this, I also had a similar vibe. Hulce, which, shout out, my first introduction to Tom Hulce was he plays Quasimodo in A Hunchback of Notre Dame.
I didn't know
he's
that.
He's both the speaking and singing voice of Quasimodo. So in my head, as he's doing most of this stuff, I'm just like, that's just funny. Quasimodo talking right now. It's very fun. Annoying, eccentric. Like I said, his character was a child prodigy and was essentially a child star. And think about child stars today with all the media and Blitz. So it makes sense that he'd be a weird, eccentric 26-year-old when he's introduced in the movie, when Salieri meets him, he says he's 26. So just imagine, you know, what that sort of being paraded around kings and queens all over Europe would do to you. And I thought he found a good note with it. Inaccurate, maybe, but plausible.
Right.
Definitely. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed the dynamic. Oh, go ahead, Josh.
No, I was just going to kind of wrap that part of Tom Hulce up by saying he's just this silly, goofy kind of guy who's just like about chasing women, and he's always drinking, and he's late to performances all the time. He's just always goofing off.
I want to give two little details about Hulce, as if we're going to rap on him. One, part of his inspiration was tennis player John McEnroe, because John McEnroe was a kind of eccentric, fiery, troubled genius for his time. But also, Kenneth Branagh was one of the finalists to get this role before the director decided he wanted an all-American cast. And Mark Hamill was Amadeus on the Broadway, on the stage version, and apparently read with several of the women who would go on to play Constance. And so, like, Mark Hamill got not too far away from being in this role, but I guess the director said that he was afraid people would associate him with Luke Skywalker. And they should stop doing that. Mark Hamill could have had a great career if he played Amadeus in Best Picture winner Amadeus. What we could have had if people could have just gotten over the idea that every audience member was going to see Luke Skywalker.
Tragic.
Because as I watched this movie, I was like, Mark Hamill would have nailed this. Just watching every bit of it.
Good tangent.
Anyway, Mark Tim Curry also podcast. Played him on stage.
Oh, nice. Now, this movie, for me, I really appreciated some of the scenes that stood out and showed the rivalry. Josh, that's, again, what you mentioned is like the driver of this movie, obviously. And for me, the very, it's not quite the end, but near the end when they're writing that symphony together, and it really showcases the genius in which Mozart's mind thinks in a way that none of these people could understand throughout. I mean, he's being told that people can only hear so many notes, and that, or their ear can only take in so many notes in the course of a day. And that is just some crazy shit to be told.
That was crazy.
And he is, this scene where they're riding together, he's hearing all of these symphonies in his brain and trying to get Salieri to write it out, his peer at this point in time, and his brain can't think. And then there's this moment where he finally hears it, and that is this something opened in his mind at that moment in time, and he could finally see. And it was just really well done, and I really appreciated that kind of a scene, because it again, the dynamic that they bring is Mozart is just genuinely trying to be himself with Salieri, and Salieri is so sneakily villainous behind his back that this really showcases a really good performance for both of them as they're going through such different stages of their life. And I don't know, that moment really just stood out to me for this movie.
Yeah, I think you also, you had mentioned the scene where he's describing one of Mozart's pieces and the music's playing in the background.
Yeah.
That's sort of one of the strengths of this movie, is the performance by Murray and the mixing of the music within the within the film really, it honestly makes you want to like classical music. And I'm not saying that I don't like classical music, but it makes you go, it makes you realize why people love it so much. Why Mozart was so respected, because it was so different how he constructed his stuff.
Yeah.
That he really was a musical genius. You had called out that scene too. Did you have anything specific about that?
No, that was it. I mean, for me, it felt like, you know, there's these things that show people who are older and having memory problems, but you play a song for them, right? And it brings them back to that time. And that performance, that moment, that scene is what really stood out to me, is so cool the way he's doing it, but like you feel like you're in his memory with him, the way it's delivered and the way it's constructed. And he's sitting there and he's almost conducting in his mind, and then you hear it as he's saying it, and it's just so well timed and constructed that it's just beautiful.
It's only occurring to me now, and we'll have to look into this, it's occurring to me now that I think did you guys both watch How I Met Your Mother?
Yeah.
Do you remember the scene where Marshall describes the perfect cheeseburger that he got that one time, and he's talking about, and suddenly a pickle, playful little pickle just emerged, you know, like, I think that's a reference to the scene that we're talking about. It's just occurring to me now. Marshall's perfect cheeseburger is Mozart's, you know, whichever song that was in the scene, Canon in D.
That's funny.
I don't know. We got to talk about the most famous scene, the scene that's often referenced. It's more farts, Josh.
Right.
But the scene where Mozart's at a party with his dad, Salieri's there in disguise, and he, as punishment, Mozart's asked to play
Salieri
various songs. And yeah, I know, it's I'd say what, Salieri is a number one hater. He is just there brimming with it. He's going to be the first draft at the player haters ball.
Play Squidward.
He is.
Same thing.
Play Salieri. And now there's a challenge.
Wonderful.
I mean, it's just, David, did I freeze on a fun face?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the one I've seen, that like there's the Family Guy version. There's a bunch of other, there's, I think I've seen it in something else, but I can't remember. But an iconic scene, obviously, where he's asked to play a bunch of different people's music. Play Gluck. Boring. You know, all that stuff. So, it lived up to the hype.
Yeah, and then the final scene I wanted to talk about is the final scene of the movie, where Salieri, in the present day storytelling, is finally, in his own way, coming to terms with his situation and his competition with Mozart. He has decided that God has named him the patron saint of mediocrity, and that it is his saintly duty to absolve people of their mediocrity, I suppose. And so he is wheeled off in a wheelchair, absolving patients in the hospital along the way. And then the last thing we hear is, as it fades to black and the credits roll. And
yeah, he's so...
it's just so haunting that this man, Mozart, it's not Mozart's fault, but he drove Salieri to insanity.
This is the classic lives rent-free
classic,
in his head,
yes,
situation where Mozart, this is not an equal rivalry. Like, Mozart probably doesn't...
he barely notices.
Probably didn't have a high view of... what, the way I interpreted it was, Mozart does not have a high view of Salieri's musical talent, but he, for the most part, respected his office, as it were. So he was like, you know, he's a count, he's the count of the court, whatever, you know, he's great, you know, he's like, he's not a musical genius, I'm a musical genius. So, like, that's the extent of Mozart's dislike for Salieri, is he just doesn't respect his musical talent. Salieri's like, this creature has defiled my love.
He hates everything
and
about
his
existence.
All this frustration, everything. So, yeah, just like to his dying day, just Salieri unable to get Mozart out of his head.
Yeah. All right, let's get into our final thoughts on this movie. I'll start by saying I really liked it overall. It's still very good from what I remember as a kid. I respect it a lot more as an adult. It is long, especially that director's cut. I agree that there are parts that should be cut out that would make it even better, I think, even though it does build a really cool world. You know, I found my mind wandering a little bit, probably about the halfway mark, before things started to heat up again. But I became so invested again in that rivalry between Mozart and Salieri and the strength of these performances that by the end I just didn't care because of how immersive it was. So, all in all, it's going to be 4 stars for me, I think.
Yeah, it's weird. It's fun. It's dark. It's tragic. It is entertaining. And I really am surprised. It made me really want to enjoy classical music, like you said, David. And the elements that they show in these performances throughout, it's really impressive. And so the big world that it created and the detail that went into the costumes is where this movie really shines. I agree. It is kind of dips about, I don't know, mid-ish way through until about a third of a way in or so. And then it gets really good. And the performances that they deliver keep you invested. So I agree. Another 4 stars from me.
Yeah. You know, Amadeus, like we talked about, is one of those films that takes its time. And that's good sometimes. You know, with a lot of the operas was where I was starting to wonder, the different operas they were putting on. Just kind of became a little bit tedious. Abraham and Hulch give wonderful performances as two men who are at odds in an unequal rivalry. Elizabeth Berridge also, I think, great performance that is overlooked by many. It's kind of strange getting to see the director's cut first. It would have been great to see what it looked like in its original form, but I'm not going to knock it for that. Funny at times, charming at times, you know, really, you know, compelling at times as well, but I kind of wish there'd been a little bit more meat. I wish that Salieri had maybe screwed with them a few different ways a few more times or something like that. I wish they had just a little bit more, you know, antagonism towards each other. But still, great ending, obviously, and obviously the production design, again, off the charts. So I also will give it 4 stars. So perfect 4 from us.
All right. Love that. I love it when it all comes together like that, when we all hit the same goal. All right. Well, we're going to we're going to play a Letterboxd game next, actually, see what the Letterboxd community has rated this movie, and also see kind of what some of the most popular reviews are. So let's get into that. It's time for our favorite part of every week on So Many Sequels. It's the Letterboxd game. For Amadeus, we should, I don't know, we need like a, if I had a proper soundboard of sorts, it would be like a Letterboxd jingle or something.
A box office.
I'll have to work on that. There's got to be some way to like incorporate a sound.
Internally, I have a little box office jingle that I do for myself.
Well, it goes. We'll have to get that recorded.
How much money did the movie make? It's the box office stats with David. And then I come in and I go, and that's me.
That's beautiful. Ridiculous. We need to get it made somehow. Anyway, in this game, we're going to each take a guess at the average score of the movie Amadeus on Letterboxd from the entire Letterboxd community. That's our favorite social media platform for movies. You can follow each of us there individually. Just check out our names. And you can follow the show there at So Many Sequels Pod. So we're going to do that. We're going to guess that. But first, we're going to read some of the most popular reviews, kind of get an idea for the feel of how people are feeling on Amadeus. Mm-hmm. So you guys start thinking of that.
These are going to be wild.
I know. Yes. Prepare yourself already. First one. 4 stars. Not naming this movie after Salieri is such a good joke. Mm-hmm. And that is... 4.5 stars. I knew Mozart was an Aquarius the exact moment his goofy, annoying ass walked into the room. 5 stars. Pretty good, but the whole soundtrack was just samples of old music. Kind of lazy.
Hey, before you move on, the guy who won best score in 1985 during his acceptance speech said, I'm glad Mozart wasn't eligible to be nominated this year.
Wow. Well, so this reviewer may disagree. 5 stars. Mozart was good, but he's no Ryan Gosling in La La Land. And then finally, 5 stars. Men would rather spend years praying on your downfall than go to therapy. So
they didn't have therapy back then.
No, they did not have therapy back then, but I think many of them still would rather just pray on someone's downfall than ever consider.
That was therapy.
That was therapy. It still is for some.
I prayed for this when it happened.
Who's going first this week? Have we had any shifts in the leaderboard, David?
Oh, you know what? It would help for me to tell you that if I had opened up the box office scoreboard, which I'll do right now. You know, it's been an up and down year so far. I believe, Josh, you are still in the lead. And... I am still last. You and Garrett are tied. Oh, 3. Goodness. I am at 2, so I will go first. My effort to catch back up.
Throw it out there.
You know, in my research, I discovered that this was one of 11 films rated PG to win Best Picture. Most Best Picture winners are rated R. So will that impact the accessibility? Will that impact how good this movie is? Letterboxd. You know, we all gave it a 4. And I feel like that can't be a coincidence. So I'm going to say 4.0.
Okay.
Josh, this is your movie. I'll give you an option. Would you like to go second or last?
Oh, okay. You know what? I'll go last.
Damn.
I know. Well, you gave me the option, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, we all gave it a 4. And so I think, and there was a 5-star in your review. I started to pay attention to the ratings that you read with those two to kind of average them with ours. So I am, in a rare occurrence, I'm going to skew on the higher side of David since he put us in a position to choose. And I will go with a 4.1. Just... skew on the other side of 4.
Screwing me, powders.
Now okay. I gotta see how Josh wants to go.
Yeah, because he can either up you one more or he can go under me. He can cover the whole bottom of the board.
That's kind of scary because, you know, it's tough to go higher than 4 in any of these movies on Letterboxd.
Because I also base it off of Lord of the Rings movies, and they were all what, David?
I think 4.1. They were all 4.1s.
Really?
Let me look.
Really?
I'll look that up while you think about it.
Well, I don't even know what the safe bet is. I feel like I'm gonna... I don't know.
Oh.
I'm gonna go 3.9.
I was wrong.
About what?
Oh, so... the first two Lord of the Rings are 4.4, 4, and the third one is 4.5 on Letterboxd. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, I feel like I'm going to go with
it. May have safe. Just changed.
I feel like the safe pick is to undercut that. I don't know if I feel good about it, but that's what I'm going to do. So we got 3.9 from me, 4.0 mm-hmm. from David, and 4.1 from Garrett. Let's see if we have a direct hit this week. We do.
I like that none of us had any idea, so the only game was like, how do we win?
I know. Isn't that how it always is? I'll tell you that we do not have a direct hit this week.
Okay. All right. Needed that.
And we all undercut a little bit too much, which does mean that Garrett is the winner. He picked 4.1, but the average is a whopping 4.3.
Wow. All right. Good for Amadeus.
Yes. So David and I went too low. So Garrett, you are going to break the tie with me, and we will have a proper first, second, and third place on the leaderboard going into next week.
Mm-hmm. Love that.
All right. And, of course, next week is our review of The Sting. I believe that's our final episode of Oscar Madness March. Is that right? Yes.
That's right.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. So we will have a new month to announce soon after that. Stick around. Stay tuned for that. Be sure you subscribe to the show on YouTube. We've got that goal of 121 subscribers. We're just slowly ticking that up as we go along. So be sure you subscribe. Share the show on your social platforms. Let people you know. Who might enjoy it, let them know about it. They might like it too. You never know. And you can also help us out by leaving a review on Apple Podcasts if you're listening to us there. Of course, subscribe to us in whatever app you're using for podcasts. And you can follow us on social media, on Instagram, TikTok, Threads, and Facebook. Finally, you can find all those links and links to our past podcast episodes at somanysequels.com. That's it. We'll see you all next week with The Sting.